Penguin Random House Canada presents Undisputed, A Champion's Life by Donovan Bailey. Read for you by the author. For George and Daisy. Adriana, Matthias, Maximus, and Marcus. With love. Undisputed. Prologue. I didn't plan to say it. I hadn't thought it through. But in the heat of the moment, after I had destroyed a television, I blurted it out. When I'm the king here, and I run shit, this will never happen. That moment changed my life. I had put my business career on hold, and now I was at a crossroads in my track career too. Let me explain. It's 1993, and I was with the Canadian national team in Stuttgart, Germany, ahead of the World Championships. I was one of the top sprinters in the country at this point and traveled to Europe with the intentions of competing in the 100 and 200 meter events, along with the men's 4x1 relay. That didn't happen. I was on the track with my fellow sprinters, Glenroy Gilbert, Bruni Surin, Atlee Mahorn, amongst others, winding my body down after practice, a few days before the relay competition, when Mike Murray, a coach with Team Canada, approached me. He delivered his message quickly, that I wasn't going to be competing in any individual competition in Stuttgart and that I should prepare for the relay, then walked away. It felt like a sucker punch. Here I was thinking my star had risen in track and field. I was hitting my stride as a sprinter. I could taste success. However, Canadian officials thought otherwise. And I felt in my heart I had been slighted. Only one of those sprinters selected ahead of me had beaten me in head-to-head competition, and my times were rapidly improving. His were not. There was no limit in sight to my abilities in the 100 meters, and I was cutting through the ranks of my own team at a pace no coach or competitor could deny. But they denied it anyways, and I was relegated in Stuttgart to just the relay team. My mind was racing, but quitting was not an option. I had to double down on my sprinting career and push even harder. The worst thing anybody can say to me is that I can't do something. And I sure as hell wasn't going to sit back and allow myself to be moved around someone's strategy board like a piece of property, which was how the Canadian athletes were too often treated. I'd watch Carl Lewis, the great American athlete, who always got paid like the star attraction he was. I'd watched the ascendance of Michael Jordan, who could be coached only by the best in basketball. I'd watched Muhammad Ali. I'd watched Tiger Woods. Many people couldn't handle a black athlete who didn't accept his place. And I was surrounded by too many people who thought they could tell me mine. Too many people who had once told another Canadian sprinter, Ben Johnson, his place. You probably know how that turned out. If not, we'll get to it. No chance were any of these people going to run my career. When I came across Murray outside our residence in the athletes' village later that afternoon, I saw red. I reamed him out and said some things I probably shouldn't repeat. Then I stormed inside. Glenroy Gilbert, my teammate and close friend, was trying to talk me down. He understood my disappointment. Us 100-meter guys were typically wound up pretty tight. But there was more going on in my head that I hadn't yet found the words to express. After venting to him, I reached for the television that was sitting on a nearby table, ripped the plug out of the outlet, and threw the TV across the room. I stared at the massive hole in the drywall for a moment, and that's when the words came to me. When I'm the king here, and I run shit, this will never happen. There's a story told by Tiger Woods, shared during his World Golf Hall of Fame induction speech in 2022, that stands out to me. Playing at some of these golf courses, I was not allowed in the clubhouses where all the other juniors were. The color of my skin dictated that. As I got older, that drove me even more. So, as I was denied access into the clubhouses, that's fine. Put my shoes on here in the parking lot, I asked two questions only. That was it. Where was the first tee? And what was the course record? That, to me, is how a champion speaks. Winners either find their way or they make one. For the champion, ceilings are imaginary. People all decide whether we want to accept or ignore the limitations that ceilings are meant to impose. Champions accept no ceilings. Woods, Lewis, Ali, Jordan, and me. Back to Stuttgart. Sure, I wasn't the king of anything yet, or a champion, and I didn't run shit. I didn't even run the relay that week, but my statement was a promise to myself. I was going to find my own path and achieve such a high level of success that no coach or ruling body would tell me what I could or could not do. Nobody would tell me to know my place and leave the decisions to the officials, especially these officials, some of them the very people who had been in charge 5 years earlier when Canada's track and field team had embarrassed the sport and disgraced the country. I came into track and field from outside their little world. They were used to dealing with athletes from a different socioeconomic class. Urban kids who didn't have clear routes to prosperity. Some, the children of new Canadians who had come to the country with very little. Some of the athletes had come to Canada themselves as children. And a contract with Athletics Canada was a chance to elevate themselves and their families from difficult circumstances. That wasn't me. Yes, I'd moved to Canada as a kid, but I'd given up a job on Bay Street in my 20s to pursue my athletic career. And I could go back to Canada's financial center at a moment's notice. My dad had taught me many things, like how to make money and to be no one's fool. So unlike the athletes these coaches and administrators were used to pushing around, I knew how things worked in the real world. I knew how to build a business and manage myself as a brand. I was going to take charge of Donovan Bailey Incorporated and make myself the dominant brand in track and field, the greatest athlete my country, maybe the world, had ever seen. That's exactly what I did. I let people run with their narratives off me too. Say what they want. That's the way I collect data on people I deal with and decide what I want to do. Since I was a kid, I've listened closely and asked a lot of questions. That's how I learned then. And that's how I learned things about Canada's athletic establishment that it doesn't seem to know about itself. I promised myself one day I'll take my story back. Tell it in my own way. And that's exactly what I've done. Chapter 1, The Why Kid. Everyone's childhood has a moment that stands out. It could be a traumatic event or a small, joyous encounter. Either way, these moments stick out in our heads for one reason or another and inform the person that we become. One of those moments came for me when I was 12 years old. I was sitting beside my mom on a bus. When I looked out the window, I could see my birth country in its full splendor. Man, Jamaica is a beautiful place. We were driving by the coast just then, so I was entranced by the ocean waves lapping against the shore. A little farther along, we were inland, and the cows were grazing in the green fields. As we drove out of the countryside, we entered the hustle and bustle of the city, and I could hear it all from the back seat. Horns, honking, loud conversations in patois, reggae blaring from stereo speakers. The chaos outside was juxtaposed to the tranquility on the bus. There was a song playing on the radio, "Nice Up the Dance" by Papa Michigan and General Smiley. Just thinking of that song makes me happy. I don't know if there was ever a song in the radio during my entire childhood that made me upset. I attribute that to my mom. She ensured that my brothers and I were always in a good mood. She had a knack for always putting us at ease and making us feel comfortable. One of the things my mom used to do, especially when she could sense I was becoming pensive, was to start talking to me in soft
Sample complete. Ready to continue?